Sure, other stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to... Oh, the microphones are on. It's just my headphones are not loud enough. Good morning. It's Wednesday, April 30th.
There we go.
I know, I need to remind you, right? You need to know what the date is today.
The last day in April. It's 30 days in September, April, June, and November. No, so there's 31.
No,
oh, no,
30.
I just said April. Ugh.
Yeah.
Out of it.
It's almost off and on. 1 month is 30, one is 31st.
I still say that rhyme. Yeah. I learned that, I don't know, I was so young when
that's
my mom taught me that.
That's a cool rhyme.
30 days in September, April, June, and November. And then it goes on, but there's no point saying the rest because you kind of get, you can figure it out from that.
That's funny, but whatever works, you know.
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
I see some people still do the, they hold their hands up to do the left and the right.
Right.
To see which says an L with their thumb and their index finger.
Yeah?
Yeah, I don't do that one, though.
Yeah.
I know my lefts and my rights without doing that.
Okay.
But I know some people that are like 30 years old that do that.
Really?
Yeah.
Left and right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Mm. Well, if you don't know your right from your left
I
by
know,
the age of
right?
30, man, you've got problems.
Yeah,
major
I agree.
Ones. You know? Wow. So how are you doing this morning?
I'm good. I woke up to some text messages and a lot of social media. Jameis Winston from Florida State, the Heisman winner, got arrested. It was either last night or this morning for, oh, he got a citation for stealing crab legs from Publix.
Really?
Like, oh my
crab
God.
Legs?
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, how insane. All my Facebook is just post after post of people making fun.
Really? So that's from your school? He's from
yeah,
school?
Yeah, because I went to Florida State.
Right.
But I mean, you're the Heisman winner.
Right.
You're obviously the top football player.
Right.
Probably
and now doesn't need
you're
the
doing
money,
baseball.
Right? Yeah.
Well, and all my friends are saying, I would have bought the crab's legs for you.
Yeah. You
I
know.
Think anyone at Publix last night
right.
would have bought those crab legs. And there's only really one, I think there is only one Publix by campus. Mm. And that's what everyone goes to. My friend saw him last night. She was buying a bottle of wine. He was buying crab legs. But I guess he didn't pay for them.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing is that, oh, so he, did he sort of like just buy them? I mean... put him in his cart and stuff? Or did he put it
know.
Like in a jacket or something?
I don't know the details.
He snuck it out. Okay.
Well, he only got a citation because I guess they're trying to reduce crime.
Right.
Like lesser crimes.
Right.
But
how embarrassing, you know?
Oh my gosh.
But why would you do something like that? I mean, you know, maybe he's just like he gets the thrill of shoplifting or something.
I don't know.
You know,
but
some
when you're
people
such a
that.
High profile athlete, I mean, right. he's constantly in the news.
Really?
Firstly, it was the rape allegations. Then there was a brawl with UF at one of the baseball games. And, of course, Jameis was the name that they just attached to that.
Yeah.
That was unfortunate for him. But now he's stealing crab's legs?
Yeah.
Like, oh, my gosh. At least if you're going to steal something worthwhile.
Yeah.
I mean, crab's you know. Legs are like $12. Really? Is that yeah, really
I'm
necessary?
Sure he's got the money. You know, he's got
oh,
problems.
Definitely. I mean... Yeah. He's not just a football player. He's a baseball player.
Yeah.
So he's like double scholarship.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Pretty good athlete.
So now he's in baseball
then,
season.
Wow.
But I mean, I don't know what they're going to do with him.
Yeah.
I mean, really? Just unnecessary.
Very unnecessary,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Very unnecessary. But I also went to the Clippers game last night, the Clippers Warriors playoff game.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
And how did they play? I mean,
the Clippers were on fire. They were ready
yeah.
to get after it. Yeah.
Wow.
And on Sunday when they played, the Warriors definitely had the upper hand because of everything that was going on. The Warriors didn't want to be there. But last night, the Clippers definitely had the upper hand and they were ready to get out there and win. It was a really good game.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
it ended
wow.
up being, it was something like a 10-point game. But it was pretty close the whole way through.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
But it was, it was a good atmosphere.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really good.
There was a time when the Clippers couldn't get any respect at all here in L.A. You know, they were new. And, you know, and we had the Lakers and everything. So everybody's like, who are these guys? But now they're a pretty good team, right?
Yeah, and they are. And now that, Donald Sterling was banned from the NBA and fined $2.5
million. Wow.
But he's fined $2.5 million, but he's selling.
Right. And he's worth billions of dollars.
Right.
Yeah.
So who really won? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess so. But, you know, I mean, the shame and the embarrassment, I think.
Oh, completely. And they had to do something because it's such a...
Yeah. And, you know, just the feeling that... just think about it. It's like the whole world hates you. You know, what kind of a feeling is that, you know?
Yeah.
You kind of want to kill yourself, you know?
I know. Well,
don't have to deal with it.
I didn't realize
anymore,
he's 81.
Right.
But he did it to himself.
Yeah.
But he also didn't realize the conversation was being recorded.
Exactly, you know? And that's the thing is that, but there's nothing you can do, you know?
Yeah.
That's the thing. You got to be able to trust some people around
you before you
reveal certain things about yourself, you know? But sometimes you don't know even the person next to you in bed. You don't know them.
Exactly. Well, really obviously, he didn't know her.
Yeah.
I wonder if they're still together.
Probably not.
You never know.
Yeah.
You never know.
But apparently, she released it probably because she wanted to get back at him for something. You know, I can't imagine why else she would release it.
Yeah, well, she's being sued.
She is?
Yeah, by Sterling's wife.
Yeah.
Because Sterling is paying with their joint money for her to live, her apartment and all these extravagant things that he's buying her car.
Uh-huh.
So Sterling's wife, because they're still married.
Oh, so he's married. Are they estranged or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, so she's suing the mistress. Okay. So it's just a mess.
What a mess, man. What a mess, you know. It sounds like a Jackie Collins novel or something, you know.
You would know, Sam, right?
Yeah, I would know. I still read those, man. I don't know what's gotten over me. Yeah.
It's cool that you read a lot.
Yeah, I do. Well, I try to find time, you know, but it doesn't leave me much time to sleep. You know, I'm on 4 hours of sleep this morning.
Wow.
So, yeah. But I'm okay, you know. I mean, just imagine I'm doing what I love to do, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, something new, a new business and everything. And it's just exciting for me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't feel like work. And that's what I wish on everyone is if you can find something you really love and you can put in all the time rather than look at the clock every minute.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
You just kind of go, oh, I wish it wasn't so late that I would have to go to sleep, you know.
Yeah.
But finally, I decided at 3 o'clock, come on, man.
It's time a little to go
too
to
much,
bed.
You know? Yeah, but I mean, can you imagine at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, your brain is like racing with stuff?
I couldn't. At 10 o'clock, if I'm not asleep, I'm like, oh my God, I have to go to bed. I'm so tired.
Okay. But you get up earlier than I do, right? What time do you get up? Like
usually,
6 or
yeah, like 6 or 7.
Yeah, you see, you're probably accustomed to that from college days and stuff, right?
Exactly, yeah.
From the swimming and all that.
Yeah.
But you see, that's cool because I'm an early morning person, but I haven't gotten to get up early in the morning in months now or years even, you know, because I go to sleep so late that I can't get up early. But I love mornings, you know, so you're very fortunate to be able to go to sleep at 10 and get up at 6. I mean, these are perfect hours, you know.
Yeah.
But I could never go to sleep at 10. Are you kidding me? I just get my second wind. But good for you. So what do you do when you get up in the morning at 6? You just kind of get on the internet and stuff?
Yeah. And whatever I have to do, if I have to write or...
Right.
Update my website, just a bunch of things.
That's true, yeah.
There's always something I need to do.
That's
even if
true.
It's just check my mail. I never seem to get a chance to do that during the day.
Really, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you seem to be doing in the morning what I do late at night.
Yeah. We just have different time schedules.
Yeah, it's just you've got more normal hours, I guess. Yeah. We have a very interesting guest coming on in just a second. I just wanted to bring up this thing that's interesting. I guess they're doing a study now or research, and they found that people's perception of what men and women find attractive are off. In other words, they're saying that men like women with less makeup. And I'm right. here to say that I totally agree with it, you know. Mm-hmm. And especially some, I mean, look, makeup always works, you know, and it really works well. But don't put too much of it, you know. And yeah. many women do, you know. They put so much base and stuff and, you know, it's like you don't even see the skin anymore, yeah. you know. And it's, to me, I've noticed it's totally distracting.
Totally. And like, you know? And I've heard that there's nothing better than when you wake up in the morning. That's the person that the other person likes.
That's
or,
true. Yeah. But that's taking it a little too far. I don't want to see anybody the way they get up in the morning, you know. But you don't need too much makeup, you know. Just sort of like highlight your face and, you know, and things like that, you know. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's not something I think a lot about. But at the same time, I have to agree with it.
Yeah,
you know?
It makes sense.
Yeah. You know, so yeah, I mean, women, you know, just don't... Because the thing is this, I think some women lay it on heavy because maybe they're trying to hide something, you know. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, you can't hide the fact that you're not beautiful. If you're not beautiful, doesn't matter how much makeup Aww. You put on, you know. I mean, look, just some people are like that, you know.
Yeah, but, like an insecurity thing, trying to hide and
right.
hide you know, behind the makeup.
I mean, look, there's one thing to put yourself together. And there's another thing to put on too much makeup, you yeah. know. I mean, makeup usually works. You know, last night at the show on the other station, there was one girl, and I'm telling you, she's got boob size like 38H, double H or something.
Wow.
I've never seen anything like this. And they're natural, too. I mean, she's, you know, wow. she's chubby. So, I mean, and she had such light skin that it like blinded the whole camera, you know. But no, so she showed up in the beginning and she was dressed in like nurse's outfit or whatever they call it. So, you know, I said, you know, just a very ordinary girl. I would never, you know, look twice.
Right.
And then, so she started getting ready for the show and everything. She knew she was going to be on camera and all that. She totally transformed herself.
Really?
Yeah. But you see, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, makeup
in a good
can
way.
Work. Yeah. Right. Yeah, in a good way. Yeah, in a good way. So, yeah, she needed some help. The way she showed up, she needed some help by the time she got on camera.
It worked. The makeup did its job.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. All right. Well, enough baloney for one morning. There's also... Oh, okay. Well, we'll get to that some other time. But we have a special guest in the studio. Her name is Elizabeth Winkler. Welcome to the show, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Sure. Winkler, no relationship to Henry or anything?
Not
do
Henry.
People ask you?
I get that asked almost every day.
Really? Yeah. You know who Henry Winkler? He was the Fonz, but that's like before your time.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't know who
there
that
used
is.
To be a show
oh,
called... And she's from Britain, too. So there used to be a show called Happy Days.
Oh, I've heard of that.
You've heard of that? So he was like the Fonz. He was like the coolest guy there, you know?
Got it.
So, but he's so different in real life, you know? He's like so gentle and everything, you know?
A very nice man.
Yeah. yeah. Do you know him? I mean, have you met him before?
Yes, I have.
Really?
Yes.
Because you're a therapist to the star, right? To the stars, right?
I mean, I do work with a lot of celebrities, yeah.
You say you're a celebrity therapist. So, mm-hmm. So the celebrities are your clients. It's not that it means you're the celebrity, right?
Right,
or maybe
right,
you
right,
are
yeah.
in your own way, too.
No, I work with celebrities, and uh-huh. I mean, I do a television show that I've been on. I'm about to do the third season on Bravo. It's not my show. I'm just a therapist to someone on the show.
I see. Okay. But what that's show? Cool. That's a way to start.
It's Vanderpump Rules, which is a spinoff of...
Your Jax's.
Yes.
Really? You see, she that's knows. Funny. She knows all the TV shows.
Did you watch?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. I've met Jax. Okay. Numerous times. Uh-huh. Funny. Small world.
Yes.
LA is.
So what's the show about? I mean,
it's a spinoff of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Oh, okay.
And Lisa Vanderpump, who's a housewife on that show, she has her own show, and they started two years ago right. and with the first season, and she has a restaurant called Sir, and they follow all of the bartenders and people that work at Sir, uh-huh. and... it's just a show about all of those people.
Right. So how do you come in?
Well, it's a highly dramatic show, as most of those Bravo shows are. And basically, I was, you know, doing therapy with Jax, and they asked, you know, if we could film that, and that's how it began.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it wasn't part of the show in the beginning, huh?
No, it was.
It was?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So
he needs some therapy.
Does he really?
So you do all kinds of therapy.
Yes. I mean, I do all kinds of psychotherapy. What do you mean exactly?
Well, because I know that his was specifically pretty much sex therapy that he needed to, and it a lot to do with his mental state, but I didn't know what kind of, because there's all different kinds of.
Right. Well, therapists. I mean, you have to, I mean, also his issues were around that and different codependency type issues, which is something I work with a lot of people on.
Right.
Basically getting in touch with who you really are, you mm-hmm. know, rather than in LA, you see a lot of this getting lost in like, sucked up in the Hollywood scene
yeah.
or, you know, losing yourself in external worlds. And so I work a lot with that. And that was part of what we were working on as well.
Right.
Very interesting.
Very cool.
Yeah. And so how long have you been doing psychotherapy now?
10 years.
10 years. Wow.
Yeah.
What did you do before that?
I was in school.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wow. I went to Tulane and then New Orleans, and then I came out here and did graduate school, and then I started doing my training right away.
Oh.
So.
Where were you born and growing
up? I'm originally from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. And they're having the tornadoes there now, right?
It's not in Tulsa.
Not
it's
in Tulsa?
Yeah, it's near
Alabama.
Yeah, it's.
Okay.
I know someone that died from.
Really?
He was on the swim team at Alabama.
Wow.
And took hiding in the basement of his house.
Uh-huh.
With his girlfriend from the tornado.
Oh, my gosh.
A retention wall collapsed. He held it up so his girlfriend could escape.
He could save her? Yeah.
And it crushed him.
Oh,
wow.
My.
Yeah. Awful. Really awful.
Wow.
Swimming communities.
Yeah.
Very hurt. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Sorry to dampen the conversation.
No, it's okay. We'll go right back up. And besides, I'm sure she's used to depressing things.
How do you deal with that? Because you're constantly trying to pick people up and mm-hmm. deal with their problems. How do you kind of escape from that?
Well, I mean, it's part of your training. And everyone does say that. They say, it must be so depressing what you do. But it's quite the opposite. Because, you know, someone who's depressed, if they end up in your therapy room, that shows in and of itself that they want change.
Right.
You know, they're initiating at least getting out of bed, showing up to the appointment, which is hard if you're really depressed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So there's always something to work with. There's always something, you know, like the silver lining. And so helping people kind of, you know, when you're depressed, step out of that and see what else they, what other strengths they have that maybe they don't realize.
That's true.
So do you kind of have a work head and then an out of work head?
I do. I go into a zone typically when mm-hmm. I'm in therapy. You know, I mean, therapy is all about empathy. So connecting to your client, and every client
right.
is so different. So being able to really be there and listen. Most people go to therapy because most people don't really listen to us, right? Everyone likes to give you advice, but everyone's advice is from their own perspective and their own life experience.
Right.
So if someone comes, you know, a friend comes to you or you go to a friend to talk to them about something, they're going to give you advice based upon their life experience, which may not be helpful to you at all.
Right.
But a therapy is trained, you know, to not do that, to put their own stuff away and really hear this person and hopefully, you know, guide them on their path.
Yeah.
Right.
It's best for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine it probably like can be pretty draining at the end of the day to have heard all this stuff, no?
No.
Really?
No.
Wow, it would be
wow,
for me.
Yeah.
I mean, but you've got to like recharge yourself somehow, right?
Yes,
I mean, all that.
If it's draining, you know, when you first start as a therapist, it can be because you don't, you know, you're not as able maybe to put yourself away.
Right, to sort of like disconnect from that personally, right?
To be able to really attune to your client and not, you know, you're not connected to your own issues.
Right.
So it's actually exhilarating, and
yeah.
I love what I do. You know, you were talking about your radio show and how it's obviously your passion.
Right.
And that's really, I mean, this is my passion.
Yeah.
I could never be without it. But also I feel like that's what I'm hopefully helping people with, is finding what their passion is,
yeah.
you know, in life.
That's true. So you sort of guide them, but I mean, you know, I've been to several therapists in my life, and I know everybody's got like a different approach and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So So you deal with it with empathy and being in tune with the client and everything. Do people stay with you for a while? I mean, some therapy takes years, right?
I have clients that are very long-standing. I have, some that have been with me for, over 5 years, wow. even longer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, some people have judgment of that. The way that I work, you have to meet your client where they are. Some people want a certain type of therapy. I was trained in more depth analysis, more Jungian, if you're familiar with Carl Jung. I found him through doing a lot of dream work. I love, dream interpretation and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I went to a school that was more Jungian based. And so I can work with people very long term in that way, which means no matter if you're not depressed, you're not anxious, you're just living life,
right.
but you want to become more and more developed as a person. You want to evolve and continue to work on yourself. That's the kind of work that I can do with people long term.
I see.
Right.
So you grew up in Oklahoma?
I was in Oklahoma till the age of 15.
Okay.
And then I went to boarding school in Connecticut.
Wow.
Yeah. Cool. And then I was in New Orleans for college. Yeah.
Did you always know that you wanted to do this kind of thing or help people?
I did know I wanted to help people when I was, 14, 15. I was working, doing social work type things in Tulsa. Helping people that were homeless and things like that. I was just interested in helping people. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know about psychology until I took my first psychology course at Tulane. And I read the book and I thought, this is exactly how I think. This is where I belong. So I knew at that point.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Yeah. So what was it like growing up in Oklahoma? Do you have any siblings?
I have a sister and a brother.
Uh-huh.
They're both in Dallas now. They're much older than I am. My brother's 10 years older and 8 years older. So I was kind of like an only child.
Yeah.
But Tulsa's a great place. It's a small town, very different from from where we are today. But it was a great place to grow up.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And so boarding school was where? In Connecticut.
Connecticut, which I loved.
Yeah.
Boarding school was the best thing I ever did.
Really?
Wow.
We had another guest that said the same thing like a week or two ago. I can't even remember who it was. But she went to boarding school too, and she said it was a great experience,
Yes. And most people hear that and they think, oh gosh, were you like a rebel or a bad kid? But in my family, it was very normal to go to boarding school. My brother went, my sister went, I went. And my friends from that period of time in my life are the closest friends I've ever made.
Really? You still have some of these friends?
All of them.
Wow.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's
cool. I guess when you're in such a small confinement with these people, living with them.
At a young age.
Yeah, exactly. You get to know people in a different way.
Well, you grow up together. Mm-hmm. You're 15, 16, 17. You're learning how to date, for the first time. You're learning how to be away from your family. How to study, how to have fun, everything. And you don't have the distraction in college of being able to go out and do things.
Right.
At the end of the day, you're in your room with your roommate, and it's just the two of you talking.
Right.
So you build these great, deep relationships.
Right. A lot of bonding probably going on and stuff. Yeah, I mean, I can see that, have each other's back and stuff, because you're both in the same position. You're young. You're away from home. And you're learning about life,
mm-hmm.
Very interesting. And so until what age? Until 18? And then,
yes.
And then you went to college?
I went to Tulane University in New Orleans.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you pick that one?
Very fun. You went to FSU?
Yeah, I did.
So we know each other well. Both very fun schools.
Yeah,
really?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Is it a pretty big school?
It's about 30,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty big.
Yeah.
But I never heard of it, but New Orleans sounds fun.
It's a great school.
Yeah.
And New Orleans is a wonderful city. It's the most cultural city that I've found in the United States.
Really? Wow.
I mean, it's changed obviously since Katrina, but I've been back once since Katrina and the city's really come back.
Really?
Yeah. Have you been?
I haven't. Well, I've been when I was 10.
So you don't remember much.
No, but yeah. I've always wanted to go to Mardi Gras and
Jazz Fest is this weekend. It was last weekend and this weekend, which is a wonderful time to go. I was going to go, but it didn't end up working out.
I just know so many stories that I've heard from all my friends have been and all my friends' friends, and I just know I have to go.
You do have to go. The food, the music, the culture there. You walk down the street, there's just so, there's many languages, the buildings, everything. It's just, it's very different for the United States.
Yeah, I want to go. On my bucket list.
Wow. So then you said you went to college, you discovered psychology, and I know I did too in college. I really like fell in love with psychology, you know, and sociology too, because it's topics you don't really talk about in high school, you know, so you're exposed to it for the first time, and it's really, you know, really interesting and stuff, so I can see how you liked it. Did you know what you wanted to do in school before you enrolled?
Well, before I found psychology, I thought I'd do sociology. I thought I'd do something like social work because, as you know, I was younger. I was doing these, working with homeless and things like that. I knew I was interested in helping people.
Yeah, it seems like you always were helping people and stuff. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So I can see where you'd succeed in being a therapist as well. You know, you got to like people. You got to be able to get along, you know.
You have to love what you do. That's the thing. I work with a lot of people that don't love what they do, you know, and
they're miserable.
They're miserable.
Right. Now, that's the thing, you know, I mean, for many years I was like that, you know, it's like I'd barely drag myself out of bed, you know, a 9-hour job at an office, you know, doing whatever, but I just couldn't take it anymore, you know, it was too much, and I thought, there's got to be a better way than, to get up in the morning. You know, there's got to be something where you want to look forward to getting up and getting out of bed and stuff, you know.
Definitely.
So So that's when I, you know, I decided that I need to do something that I love to do.
Great.
Yeah. So now we're not going to ask you for any names of your clients and stuff, because even if they weren't celebrities, it's still not something that therapists disclose. But how did you, how did you find that niche? It just happened. Just happened?
Yeah.
Wow.
I didn't advertise or anything. I just, you know, I worked with different clients and in different areas. And people talk to other people, and that's how it kind of spread.
Wow.
Well, I mean, your expertise, it's a long list. Really, like eating disorders, dream work, motherless daughter issues, substance abuse, parenting, relationship with marriage counseling.
Wow,
it's like a lot. So you cover pretty much everything.
Yeah.
So anyone that does need therapy can come to you.
Yes.
It's not like you're just a narrow, you only deal with one kind.
Right. And I, you know, what I say to clients when they first come in is the most important thing is that you feel comfortable with me or with any therapist for that matter. If you don't feel comfortable in the room, like you can really reveal yourself, then the therapy is not going to go anywhere.
Right.
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 And so that initial meeting is really the first chance for you to see if it's a good fit. For any person seeing any therapist, it's so important. I hear so many stories about people who've given up on therapy or just gave it a one shot, and they went to see someone and they said they didn't like it, and then they just write it off.
Right. They think all the therapists are like that.
Right.
I know. I've seen that happen, and it's terrible because some people really do need the help.
Yes.
Yeah, the guidance, you know. So from Tulane, you went to where?
I moved to L.A.
Oh, you did?
I did.
What made you want to move to L.A. out of all places?
Well, it's funny. My sister was living out here, and I had done a research internship at UCLA in the psychology department on schizophrenia and things like that, which I don't work with anymore. I just did research.
Yeah.
So I was doing that between my junior and senior year, and I fell in love with Los Angeles.
Wow.
I did not think I would.
Really?
But I did, and so I decided to move out here, and that's how I ended up here.
Wow.
When did you start your own practice?
She said 10 years ago, right?
I've been doing it for 10 years. You know, prior to that, I worked in an AIDS service center for several years in Pasadena. I also worked in a hospital in Van Nuys, Valley Presbyterian Hospital. When I was working there, I was on the palliative care team, which palliative care is end-of-life care. So I was working with people who were dying or terrible accidents. Unfortunately, in Southern California, we have a lot of pool accidents with children.
Really?
Wow. And, you know, children who fall in the pool or who drown. And I was the person who worked with the families. And
oh my gosh, how is that?
It was really tough.
Yeah, I imagine. Tough. I mean, but that's the thing. I mean, you know, God bless you for all this, you know, because how many people are like that,
yeah.
you know? I mean, to be driven by, really, by altruistic reasons is amazing. You don't see that a lot, you know? So you've always had it in you, you know? And that's amazing because if it weren't for people like you, nobody would take care of these people.
Oh.
You know? I know, for me, it would be really tough, you know? I mean, for me to be around sick people is a tough thing. I don't know why, but it is, you know? And so, you know, the courage that you have and people like you, you know, that's what I think keeps society going, you know? Otherwise, we'd let all these people just
definitely
fall by the wayside and die with no nobody caring, you know?
I think that we all have a bit of that in us, though. Yeah. I do believe we do.
Yeah.
You see that a lot when tragedies happen, you know? I mean, I remember 9/11. Do you remember what happened in this city? You weren't here. But everyone gathering on the streets, you know, everyone out together with candles in the streets. I mean, it was just when tragedies happen, it's amazing what that brings out in the human spirit.
Yeah, people get closer, right?
It's true.
I know,
and
I know.
It connects us. Mm-hmm. It does. Yeah.
And it's unfortunate that it has to happen only during times like these, you know. And I remember, you know, I'm from Israel, and there it was always like that. When there's war, suddenly everybody is like brothers and sisters, you know. It's like we're all in this together.
Yeah.
But then when there isn't, you know, it's just everybody doing their own thing and stuff. So, I mean, so like Charlotte said, you handle a lot of different things. That must have taken like a lot of training and stuff, right? I mean, it's a tall order to deal with all these things. I mean, each one of them by itself would probably require years of education. So
well,
how do you do it?
It's part of your education. You know, you take different classes in graduate school, and then your real education is the clients that walk into your room, the people that you see.
Right.
So I had a lot of experience, obviously, with AIDS and HIV, working in that community for so long, and then with death and dying, and I mean, and then codependency. It's interesting. I'm working on a book because basically every person that was walking into my room, my therapy room, was dealing with some form of that. And I felt like, gosh, I could write a book on this with my eyes closed. I've seen it so much.
Wow.
So it's just, it really kind of comes to you.
Yeah. What is that? I mean, you got us curious now. What is that thing that you found out?
Well, for me, it's really about figuring out who you really are. You know, you were talking about the radio show and how you weren't happy. You didn't want to get out of bed. And now you're sounds like very happy doing what you're doing.
Right.
There's a big difference in that.
Right.
Like, what happened? What was that shift that happened for you? That's what I'm working with.
Right.
So people often, they grow up with their parents or the media, your parents or your siblings all influence you. And the culture you grew up in influence you as to what you're supposed to be or you should be. Mm-hmm. And there was a therapist, I think in the 60s or 70s, who said, stop shoulding all over yourself. So I try to remove that word should from people's vocabulary because should really doesn't belong to you. So if you say, I should go, what's the should for you? Charlotte, do you have one?
I don't know. I don't know. There's probably a lot of things I should do.
But that's the thing. I think it shows that you're more like others focused, right? I mean, it's like you're like thinking, what should I do because of what people think and what people say.
Yeah, like, okay, I should be, let's use like an LA typical, which I should be thinner.
Right.
You know, seeing all these billboards all over, you know, that we're always seeing. So let's say someone's struggling with that. What I try to help them with is let's remove that word should and say, I want. So does that work for you? And if the I want is true to you and it feels like it fits, then you keep it is what I say. And if it doesn't, then I want you to just throw it away because it doesn't belong to you. Maybe it's your mother's voice. Maybe it's your father's voice.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the culture. Maybe it's the media. Mm-hmm. And typically it is. So it's about kind of letting go of all of these different personas or different things that we've taken on from culture that don't belong to us, and then actually discovering who you really are. Because I find so many people that are just living these lives, you know, going through the motions, and they're not happy.
Yeah.
Because they're not in touch with their passion or their true self.
Right. Now, what are some of the, what problem or what issue do you see most with clients? I mean, is there such a thing? I mean, is there like a prevailing theme where you feel that many people need to work on?
I would say it's that. It's really connecting to your true self.
But is there I get that. I totally get that. But as far as like drug abuse, you know, schizophrenia, things like that. No, go ahead.
Anxiety.
A lot,
right? Anxiety, depression are probably the most common.
Do you think this has to do with our modern lifestyle?
I do. I mean, I think that we've lost touch with, you know, we connect through social media and all that, and that's all fine, but we've lost a lot of that intimacy, yeah. I believe,
yeah.
you know,
Definitely.
In our daily life and really hearing each other and being there for each other. I mean, how many times do you see people sitting at a table and everyone's on their phone?
Right? All the time. Yeah. Right? Oh, my gosh.
So losing that human connection, I think, is a very modern issue that I see a lot. And right. with relationships, I work with a lot of couples.
Uh-huh.
And losing that intimacy. And I'm not talking about sex. I'm talking about emotional intimacy of really being able to connect, you know, whether right. you're married or you have kids or all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Wonderful. Well, we're talking to Elizabeth Winkler. You guys can follow us. Her website is elizabethwinkler.com. And you can find out all the things that she does. You're located in Beverly Hills, right? That's
yes.
what you're based out of. How do you start a practice? You don't have any clients yet or anything like that. How do you do that? I mean, it's got to be pretty scary in the beginning, right?
When I first started, I was working at the AIDS Service Center in Pasadena. And one of my mentors there took me on. In her practice, uh-huh. which was in Mid-Wilshire, La Brea. And so I started there, and a couple, you know, some of the clients from the clinic came with me, and then I just started to get clients.
Wow.
My mentor gave me some, and then it just spread, you know, through people talking.
Right.
So word of mouth.
Right.
And then eventually, you know, I was there for a couple of years, and then I moved to Beverly Hills.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. Well, you know.
So it's an easy transition.
You know, it's tough.
Easy-ish.
It's tough. I mean, when I first started in that private practice with my mentor, I was working at the hospital. I was working at the clinic. And, you know, I was running groups. And I was doing my practice. So I was doing lots of different things. And then eventually, when I moved to Beverly Hills, I stopped doing all of that and just focused on my private practice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, are you seeing, like, a lot of drug use and stuff among celebrities and things like that, since we focused
yes.
on that?
Yes.
Really? Well, like, what's the most common now? Is it still cocaine, or do people do like meth?
What's common, or popular is Molly. That's been a more popular. Are you familiar with
no.
what that is?
What's Molly?
A lot of people at FSU use that.
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
What is it?
Yeah.
Never heard of it.
It's MDMA. It's like a form.
Oh, okay. So yeah. MDMA is like ecstasy, right?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. It is.
Apparently, it's more, you know, clean or than ecstasy.
Drugs are scary. They scam me so much.
Yeah.
Wow. So a lot of people do that, huh? A lot of people.
It's very
do that.
Popular in younger people, like you were saying, in
yeah.
college
right.
age, as well as. You know, 20s, 30s. It's a lot of people. And yeah, it can have terrible effects on you. Depression and, I mean, as well as addiction, obviously.
Right. Do you deal with sex addiction as well?
I do.
Some people, right? Now, the thing is that this makes me wonder, because I think that almost every man I know is addicted to sex, you know. So where's the problem there? You know?
So how are you defining it?
Yeah, well,
that's what we need to talk about.
Yeah, well, I'm defining it as something I need to do, you know. And the more the merrier, you know. And I know that many women are like that too. So, you know, I mean, but at what point it becomes an addiction? Probably when it interferes with your life, right?
It interferes with work, your family. You're taken away by, so your work life is affected. Your family life is affected. Let's say you're married and you're cheating on your wife with multiple partners or, you know.
Right.
I mean, every scenario is so different.
Right.
And if it's if you're driven by it, and I know what you're saying. You're
right.
Saying
no, I was that, just kidding. Really.
No, I get it. But there's a distinct difference.
Right. Yeah. Because most men like control themselves and stuff. I mean, yeah, if you set them free, then what you get is what gay men do. And that's very promiscuous and everything. So if men had the opportunity to be as promiscuous like that all the time, straight men, they probably would be. But at the same time, yeah, I understand, because I understand also like with drugs or food or things like that, if you do it in moderation, it's okay. But an addiction interferes with your life. It's like with the people in your life. So a sex addiction would be pretty similar to drug addiction or to gambling or
absolutely
anything like that, where it can tear apart your family.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, people have problems, you know. I mean, people have a lot of problems.
The important thing that people miss about addiction is it's the addiction is just the symptom of a deeper issue. You know, people are
right.
seeking out, they're distracting themselves. I mean, addiction is real and it's a disease. Okay, so that needs to be said. However, looking at me being, you know, interested in depth work, I want to look at what is going on beneath this.
Right.
And often, you know, let's say there's a man who is struggling with sex addiction and he's willing to do that work. He goes into treatment. He wants to be in recovery and he's willing to look at what are those deeper issues that he needs to stop distracting himself from.
Right.
And if he can deal with that, then there's, you know, a chance for recovery. But if not, then,
yeah,
you know,
that's true. Yeah. And I also imagine probably now in the internet age and everything, probably porn interferes with people's lives too, right? I mean,
absolutely.
Do you see that?
Yes.
Really? Like people overdo it and stuff, right?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then they can't really be intimate with
yes.
a human being, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. That's pretty scary
yeah,
stuff, you
it
know?
Is.
But it's like so easy to fall into it and stuff, you know, because it's like easily gotten and everything, you know. I mean, you can just access mm-hmm. everything that you want.
I know. That's the
online.
Whole, you know, with the internet now and social media and all these, you know, Tinder and everything.
Yeah.
And now when you're so young, I mean, 12-year-olds have iPads and can get a hold of anything they want on the internet. And it's like people are starting from such a young age, which
right.
is also scary because, I mean, you're so young. And I, when I was 12, I wasn't on the internet, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Right. So now do you deal, I'm sure sometimes you deal with someone who's like so ill that they need to go to a psychiatrist first, right? Before they can stabilize them so you can talk to them. Because I know I've had times in my life where I was so depressed or so sick that the therapist couldn't work with me.
Oh, wow.
You
so
know?
Basically, I see people all the time that need medication.
Right.
And so I will work with them if they, you know, if we'd agree to work together, and I will refer to them to a psychiatrist to get medication. Studies have shown that if you do only psychotherapy or only medicine, that those have certain results. But if you do both together, the results are you know, they're so much better.
Right.
So a lot of people are very resistant to taking medication.
Right.
And so I try to educate them on that my belief system is a medicine should work very well for you if you find the right one.
Right.
You have to try several sometimes to get the right medicine.
You really
for
do, you.
You
know. I mean, I'm on medication and stuff. I'm not ashamed to say. And I got to tell you, you know, after years of feeling great, you know, I don't like the side effects and everything. So I thought maybe I'll try and taper off and stuff, you know. And so my doctor said, okay, try it, but do it at a certain rate. I just like totally impatient for a few days. I totally tapered myself off. I got so depressed. I can't even tell you. I was like, I thought to myself, I mean, for over 12 years, I don't remember ever feeling like that.
Wow.
It's taken, you know, it's been that long since I felt that way. And I thought, you know what, the hell with this. I learned to live with the side effects, but some people just need it, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's why I don't understand when people totally knock medicine and, you know, and they say it doesn't work or, you know, people are prescribed it too easily and stuff like that. But the thing is that it works. You know, some people need that boost in their brain.
It does. And I mean, it's your chemistry. It's your brain chemistry, and your brain chemistry changes over time. And sometimes the medicine will correct your brain chemistry and you can go off of it and sometimes not.
Right.
So, but most importantly, finding something that works for you. If you try a medicine and sometimes the side effects are so bad that you can't be on it, but you can try something else and then that works well for you.
Right.
And my experience also with medicine is you should still, you're not going to be numb. You know, some people, they're afraid to go on medicine because they feel like, well, I don't want to feel, have, you know,
like a no zombie healing. Or something. Like,
and if the medicine's making you feel that way, you're not on the right medicine.
One. Exactly. Exactly. Right. I mean, I don't feel it, you know. Right. I only feel it when I don't take it.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. But, and finally, eating disorders and stuff, that's a major issue still, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, my I was in a relationship with a woman that had eating disorders, and I could tell she was going through hell, you know. So, and this is mostly a female issue, right?
Not necessarily.
No?
No. I mean, really? And, you know, you have anorexia, you have bulimia, you have the overeating. There's – and you see it in men as well. It's just not talked about as much.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. So, I mean, because I've never seen an anorexic man.
I have.
But you have, huh?
I have, yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah. I mean, it does exist. But, I mean, I think that in the media and, you know, in our culture, people are more likely to talk about it if they're female. It's not.
Yeah. Because also females have more pressure, I think, to look great, right?
Right, yeah.
I mean, you were talking about L.A. and looking thin and everything.
Photoshop and...
Yeah, that. You know.
Right. Mm-hmm. How people are photoshopping their Instagram.
Right.
Now?
They have the perfect body? Is that what it is? Okay.
Yeah, but people see that and think that that's the way that they should look.
I know, right. And now people are doing that themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. On Instagram, they're photoshopping their own.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So sad that people think that they have to do that.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. What about online dating? A lot of people still doing that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Do you encourage people to do that, or do you think it's kind of like detached?
I think it's so dependent on the person. And, I've heard a lot of my clients, the popular one now is Tinder.
Yeah, I know. I've been using that. But you know what? I got to tell
really?
You.
Really?
Because I read about it.
Sam.
No, I mean, wait a minute. It's just about meeting people. It's just about saying
whether
you like or don't like someone, right? But
it's
let me tell
so
you why I don't
superficial.
Like it. Yeah. But let me tell you. Well, you know, I actually dated someone through that, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah. It didn't. Nothing happened. I mean, it didn't turn out to be anything. But at least we met for coffee and stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe it works. But I got to tell you, I hate it because every time I log into it, the first woman is always not a very attractive one. And I know that if I say yes, it's going to say you got a match. Because the matches always come the first couple of people. So I make sure I say no. You know?
It's just such a superficial app.
Yeah.
I haven't been on it. So you've been on it, obviously.
Yeah, I first downloaded it like 8-9 months ago.
Uh-huh.
Because all my friends in Florida were talking about it. And they're like, Charlotte, you're new to LA. You should get it.
Right.
But it's just...
it's very popular. It's very popular. So many of my clients are on it and they love it. So to answer your question, I do encourage people if it's the right fit for them. I mean, I would never say you need to go on online dating. It needs to come from them. They need to want to do that. But I find a lot of professionals who are very busy with their lives and they don't meet anyone, that there's no other avenue for them. So, yes, of course, I brought it up in certain situations and said, well, have you thought about online dating? And then, you know, we discuss it as an option.
Yeah. Yeah, and everybody needs to find the right one for them.
Definitely.
You know? Okay, well, Elizabeth, go ahead and give out your website again. It's elizabethwinkler.com.
That's right.
And so are you going to publish your book soon? I mean,
I'm still working on it. Yeah, maybe I'll come back when I have that for you.
Amazing. Okay. So I imagine you don't work only with celebrities, but anyone.
I work with all sorts of people. Yes. Right. Professionals, couples, mostly adults, but I'm open, right. You know, just you can find all the information on my website, email me or call me.
Yeah, Facebook, Twitter, everything, and looks good. You definitely cover a lot of issues here, and this is cool, and you have off-site counseling too, so.
Yeah, with celebrities, typically they like me to, you know, I go to them, so right. I do that as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. God, I mean, it's like our celebrities are like royalty, you know? I mean, we treat them like, my God, you know? What is this? You're just an actor, you know? You just, you know? So you play someone else on screen, so.
Right.
You know, but we treat our celebrities that way, I guess.
Well, the paparazzi can be quite a nightmare, you know?
Yeah, I know. Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us. You're a lot of fun. All the best to you.
Thanks.
And everybody, thank you for listening. Thank you, Charlotte.
See you in the morning.
See you. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte, right here on LA Talk Radio.